a great-grandchild of the Maggid of Mizrik, the holy Rabbi Yisrael of Erushin, who was very closely connected to the Tzemach Tzedek. They were very, very close spiritual kin, was intensely interested in stories of the Baal Shem Tov. When the holy Roshner, as he was known, came to the town of Skola, Rabbi Yisrael Roshner asked the people of Skola whether there was anybody in the city who knew the Baal Shem Tov. The people replied that there was indeed an old man who had seen the Baal Shem Tov, and not only that, who had seen the Baal Shem Tov perform a great wonder. "I would like very much to see this old man," the tzaddik suggested. The chassidim hurried to the old man, begging him to come to their rebbe. The old man refused. Nothing could make him change his mind. When, a few days later, the rebbe again asked to see him, the chassidim again went to fetch him, and again the old man refused to go. When the rebbe expressed his desire the third time, the chassidim took a stronger hand. "If you do not come of your own free will," they threatened, "we will be forced to take you bodily. After all, the rebbe has asked to see you." Finally, the old man agreed to accompany the chassidim to the roshana. "You must forgive my stubbornness," the old man apologized to the roshana tzaddik, "but I saw the Baal Shem Tov perform a miracle once. He literally was mechayim meisim. He revived the dead. Since then, I have refused to go to any other rebbe. Only he truly deserves the name." And then the old man went on to tell his story. In the village where he lived, there was a miller who employed a worker in his flour mill. A wealthy man, the miller was also a chassid of the Baal Shem Tov. Miller's wife became critically ill. The worker turned to his employer for help. "I want to go to the Baal Shem Tov. Only he can help my poor wife. Would you lend me your wagon to get to Mezhebish and back?" "Certainly," the good man agreed. "But I want you to come along with me. I want you to intercede on my behalf and ask the Rebbe to accompany us back." The kind employer agreed to this request as well. They both set out from Mezhebish, and thanks to the miller's efforts, succeeded in getting the Baal Shem Tov to accompany them back home. They returned home happily, hoping for the best. Their mood was shattered, however, when they approached their village and saw the workers' children rushing toward their carriage. "It is too late, father," they cried woefully. "Mother is already dead. They have laid her out on the floor." "Never mind," the Baal Shem Tov said to the people. He turned to the worker. "Go inside and whisper in your wife's ear the following message. Rivka, get up and prepare supper. We have a most important guest," the Baal Shem Tov. The worker did as he was bidden. He whispered the words into the dead woman's ear. It had no effect upon her. He tearfully returned to the Baal Shem Tov. "She does not move," he cried. "Go back and repeat the words," the Baal Shem Tov instructed. The worker returned a second time, telling his wife to rise and prepare supper for their celebrated guest. There was no reaction. The distraught man returned to the Baal Shem Tov for further instruction. "Repeat your message. This time, however, add that if she does not rise, you'll see that she will be beaten with a stick." The worker returned with the same message. This time, however, his words had an effect. The woman sat up and stretched, wiping her eyes as if from a deep sleep. Then she went off to the kitchen to prepare supper. "I saw all this with my own eyes," the old man testified. "How could I then dream of approaching another tzaddik?" "I also have a fascinating story to tell," the Roshner tzaddik said to his audience. "I heard it from my great-grandfather, the famous Maggid of Mizrik." "Moshe was a Jew who had seen better days," Rabbi Yisrael began. However, bad fortune overtook him and turned him into a pauper. He went to the Rebbe to tell him of his misfortune. Upon telling the Rebbe his woeful tale, the Mezrisha Magid told him, "Go find yourself some tavern to rent. Hashem will help you make a livelihood from that." "Rent, Rebbe? With what? One needs hundreds, if not thousands, of rubles to pay the rent and stock a tavern up with whiskey." "I don't even own money to pay my fare back home," the man wailed desperately. "You heard what I said. That is my advice. Go, and Hashem will be with you. Here is a coin to get you started." The Mezrisha Magid withdrew a small coin from a purse and gave it to Moshe. Moshe took the coin trustingly and left the Rebbe's house. He let his feet take him to the marketplace, to a stand of coaches. One coach seemed about to leave. "Where are you headed for?" he asked the driver. The man mentioned the place. It made no difference to Moshe, but trusting the Rebbe, he asked the price of the fare. His coin would cover the fare. Without thinking twice, Moshe jumped on the carriage, and they were off. After they had been traveling for some time, Moshe noticed a large group of wagons congregating ahead in the courtyard of some inn. He asked his driver the reason. "That tavern has been abandoned for many years now. People say it is haunted, since all the tavern keepers who have tried to run it were either injured or frightened away. People are afraid to enter it, but we wagon drivers usually stop by there just to rest a bit before continuing on." "I would like to rent that tavern from its owner," Moshe thought aloud. The driver laughed. "You must be crazy. I told you that many people have been injured there through no logical reason." When they finally pulled up at the courtyard, the driver called out to the other drivers, "Here's a Jew who says he would like to rent this haunted tavern and run it." They all laughed loudly. Are you serious? They asked to prolong the jest. Seeing that he was, they took Moshe and presented him to the landlord. Moshe was fluent in the Polish language, having had many Gentile contacts as a merchant in the past. The landlord was honest with his prospective tenant, outlining the dangers that lay before him. "This tavern has been vacant for a long time now. Many of the previous tenants suffered in various ways during their stay there." "I am not afraid," Moshe insisted. "I have faith in Hashem that nothing will happen to me." The landlord was impressed by the Jew's firm belief. "Very well," he agreed. "I will let you have the tavern for very cheap, and you need not pay anything down. You can pay out the rent in the course of the year." The Jew was very happy with this arrangement. "But I have a family," he pointed out. "I need wagons to transport them and all my belongings." The landlord agreed to lend him wagons to bring his family. Before long, the new tavern keeper had set up house and shop. Business was excellent from the very start, and both landlord and tenant were very happy with their deal. Before long, Moshe was able to pay all of his rent and make handsome profits besides. The landlord grew to respect the Jew. Before long, Moshe was managing all the Gentiles' affairs. "I want to invest in a large herd of cattle," the landlord once called Moshe to him. "I am entrusting you with a large sum of cash to take to the coming fair. I will pay you handsomely for your efforts, for I trust you and your good judgment far more than I do my secretaries." The landlord had bypassed his Gentile secretary bookkeeper this time in favor of the Jew. The bookkeeper resented the fact deeply. A strong animosity began to smolder within him. His hatred became so virulent that he plotted to murder the Jew. Calling three local farmers to him, he said, "The Jewish tavern keeper is going to the fair with 50,000 rubles. I want you to lay in wait for him in the nearby forest. Take 3 days' food with you and the tools for the job. There is a rich reward in store for you if you succeed." Meanwhile, Moshe returned home with the money. He told his wife of his mission and asked her to pack his bags. I think it would be wise to go first to the Rebbe and ask for his bracha, his blessing, she suggested. The idea appealed to Moshe and did as he was suggested to him. It was Wednesday when Moshe left the tavern. He intended to go first to the Rebbe for a bracha and return home for Shabbos. The fair was scheduled for Sunday, so he hoped to leave that Saturday night, that Motzei Shabbos, for the fair. The Rebbe, in his spiritual insight, knew that Moshe was due to arrive. He called his gabbai to him, forbidding him to allow the tavern keeper an audience, no matter how hard he would beg or how much money he would offer. Moshe arrived, but despite his hurry, was refused an audience with the Rebbe. As the Maggid had predicted, he offered large sums of money, but the gabbai was strict in his refusal to admit him. Shabbos went by, as did Sunday and Monday. Finally, on Tuesday, the Rebbe agreed to see Moshe. Moshe was by now at his wit's end. His chances for buying the cattle his master had ordered were gone, all because he couldn't gain an audience. Never mind, the Rebbe comforted him, that you took so long to see me. Go to a different city. There you will find cattle to your satisfaction at the same prices. The chassid followed the Rebbe's advice and returned happily with his merchandise. He presented himself to his employer, even giving him change from his purchase. The latter, overjoyed at the shoe's successful purchase, congratulated him heartily. Just then, the three farmers returned from their fruitless vigil. When they saw the Jew standing before the landlord, being complimented upon his wife's purchase, they could not contain their anger. You should thank your lucky stars for being alive now, they said to the Jew in the presence of the secretary who sent them on the vigil. We were hired by this man here to kill you for a reward. We lay in wait for you in the forest for several days, and we waited and we waited and we waited, but you never came. We got tired of waiting, and the time was up, and we finally came back here. The secretary paled at this admission. He saw that he could not refute nor deny the accusation. The landlord quickly took the matter in hand and punished the revengeful secretary for his evil intention. Suddenly, Moshe understood why he had been delayed by the Rebbe's gaboyim. It had, he now realized, all been for the good, and it had been done by none other than the Maggid himself, so that he should be able to be saved from the hands of those who had those murderous intentions. In next week's installment, Emir Sashem, the tale of how a prominent non-chosid became a chosid of the Baal Shem Tov. But that's Emir Sashem next.